You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello again. Long time no speak. In case you missed it, this is actually the second episode dropping today, and brings an end to the first week of 2 weeks full of new episodes, leading up to the 2-year anniversary of Fly on the Call, episode 100, and a brand new theme song. This week I've already spoken to Pronoun, Palette Knife, Matt Wilson of Set Your Goals and Near Dark, The Big Easy, and now I'm excited to add The Spins to the list. They're an alt-rock band with sunshiny vibes who also dip their toes into many other areas of rock. We're talking all about their debut LP, Not If But When, the extended recording process, their influences, and working to create an album experience rather than just a collection of songs.
I feel like the whole album is really like a cool mix between like these hazy, sunshiny vibes and kind of like the intimate, like confessional performance at the back of like a dark bar. Can you talk a little about how you kind of like came about your sound and how you kind of like balance those two sides of it?
We all like different kind of musics, and I like all my alternative a lot. They're into Jimmy's in the rock, and Phil's into jazz and prog rock, and Freddie's also into like Rush, which is like prog rock.
Right. We all listen to like a lot of different music, and
it's kind of, we also try to like make it poppy, because like, you know, popular sounding, like digestible, if you will.
Yeah, digestible.
But writing like the lyrics and stuff like that, I just try to, I don't even know, like confessional is a good word for it.
Yeah, got a lot.
It's a lot of just personal stuff, right?
Yeah, I feel like your music as a whole is kind of like, it leans more on the emo side than a lot of the stuff that's like classified as like alternative rock, which is something close to my own heart. So that works out in your favor with me. But I'm curious, like kind of where, what areas are that you like kind of draw the most influence from?
I really like Midwest emo a lot.
Yeah, I'm with that as well. Like I was really influenced by like modern bass, all those great.
Oh, I'm talking like cap and jazz. And like from the 90s and stuff, like
American Football.
Well, that was the later band, but other examples.
Didn't listen to it, tell you.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. That's the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Well, Nick's a big Modest Mouse fan. He'll tell you all about it.
Yeah. My favorite band ever, too. I like took my guitar sound from Isaac Brock a lot, too. He's like been like my big inspiration for writing music in general, also.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Not If But When as a whole is like really super dialed in, which I think kind of makes sense since it's been, you know, this extended writing process where, you know, by the time it's out, it'll be, you know, almost 2 years that you've been working on it. How does it kind of like feel to finally be at the end of that tunnel?
Great. Yeah, it's like, it's our first full-length too, obviously. Yeah. So it feels like, you know, we're just really proud of it. Or like, we put a lot of work into it. We're really happy with how it came out. And definitely feels crazy to finally just be able to hear it. Definitely exciting. Like you said, we've been sitting on it for a long time. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and like working with bands that I love to do. So it was just a crazy experience. I'll never forget it.
I mainly feel inspired for the next one, truthfully. I'm excited to make more art.
Yeah,
like more albums,
too.
Right?
Everyone
because
here does
now, sure. You know, I feel like most people would agree that once you release something and it's finished, it's like no art is really ever done, right? Disneyland is never being never done. Disney World is never done
the
being built.
Example.
It's never done being built. You know, it's never gonna be finished. They're never gonna say we're done now, no more rides. They're just gonna keep expanding on it and stuff. And when you release it permanently. I've been trying to make it more dynamic in our live performances, the songs, so that they get new breath to them. And I'm excited to go on to the next album, knowing what I know now, making the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a big learning experience.
Different than making an EP, for sure.
Yeah, in what ways was it kind of like different?
More intense, first of all. Well, I honestly can't. This is my first album. I wasn't in a band until this album. Got it. So that's up for you guys.
First EP, for example, was just mostly songs that I had already written at the end of high school. And when we got the band together, it was just us, you know, making those into songs or, you know, working on them. But, and then with the second EP, it got a little more interesting with more takes and pulling from different inspirations. Then by this full length album, we had, you know, incorporated Phil into the band, and he gave us a whole nother perspective and a new ear to our music, which inevitably changed our sound again. And that's where a lot of Not If But When comes from, a lot of the new dynamices or different sounds and vibes, right? Just because, you know, he brought a lot of jazzy ideas and stuff.
Major seventh chords.
And with like the kind of the more intensive and like expanded like writing process, what part of it kind of like stood out the most to you, or that you felt like you kind of were able to see that growth the most?
In the studio with Gary.
Yeah,
when he took the original demos and was just like, I would do this, try this.
Yeah.
And he was right. And just he was right 90% of the time.
Like learning things about how to like make a song, take a song to the next level and like keep interesting, and like do things to like captivating the listener.
Like, not just write a song, but make a record.
Yeah.
Like that's how I like to put it.
Because
like,
it was just a bunch of songs we'd written. And you know, they could have worked together, but without his input, I don't think it would have hit. It hasn't really been really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's for me. I like to listen
come
to
together as like one piece.
And are there any kind of like moments in particular that you can think of that like you're like, okay, yeah, this was a positive change?
I would say at the end of Fade Away, we originally went back into the chorus, and it was Gary's idea to take that out because then it gives it more realistic value, because he leaves people hanging and they're like, there's supposed to be another chorus there. So they just end up listening to the song again. Cause we're all here.
Yeah, Gary really they, like
he knows it, like it helped, like he helped us show how to like build more tension in our songs,
make it more interesting instead of like he'll like
mystery, keep the mystery behind it.
Yeah, because like one thing he did a lot was like cut the chorus in half. Like you have these two huge choruses, cut them in half, do it once, and then by the time the end, they haven't heard it yet, so something new and like so it keeps the ear fresh, which is what you need if you want someone to listen to a song.
For sure. Yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that actually, because I feel like On the Fence kind of like ends in this really kind of like almost triumphant way. And I'm like, this doesn't feel like, this feels like the start of a record.
Yeah, that's the point.
Like, yeah, then you want to go right back
exactly,
to the
beginning. That's what we were trying to do. Go back, like when Fade Away starts again, you're like, okay, I'm okay with the second rock.
I'm excited to like maybe do something at the beginning of the next album that feels like it should have came from On the Fence, you know?
Yeah,
maybe it's just like a whole anthology that just fits together. I don't know. It's going to take some planning, but.
I love when bands do stuff like that for sure. And I mean, I feel like, you know, the fact that this was recorded over a span of 3 weeks, which is like kind of not really that common these days. What was it that kind of like made you want to go like all in that way?
Well, the first two were recorded over 2 to 3 days.
Three weeks
was like very nice. It was a nice surprise. So I mean, like, I personally didn't feel a lot of pressure, like time wise. I was just more pressured, like making sure everything sounds good because, like, I mean, we know the song. Like, we came with a bunch of songs that, like, we already knew inside and out almost. So it was just more so like rearranging the songs. So it was like. And I know like so many bands take like years to put out records. Like I just watched a documentary about a Pink Floyd album, and like they just kept pushing it off because it just wasn't ready, which like, I mean, I couldn't imagine doing that because like we recorded this in 3 weeks, and it was just like, I couldn't imagine like being able to have that time to think. And I mean, that's why their records come out like perfect, is because they have all that time. Yeah. So I mean, it's nice, like it was almost like nice to be able to be put under that kind of pressure without kind of knowing it. And then now that we know, like if one day, like we do have a bunch of money, we have a bunch of time to spare, we know that we can make an even better record than what we have.
Yeah, it was kind of like Gary's idea too, like because like he told us once we were there, like he doesn't, 3 weeks is even like the shortest he usually does, because he like, you know, like once you're just setting your mind on making music and nothing else a week straight, like you can record, like that's all you're focused on for that, you know, period of time. Like you're not going to the studio, then you got to go to work and then come back and keep, like all you're doing is just, that span of time that you've set aside. I feel like that definitely came
and
out.
And honestly,
surprisingly, we like hanging out with each other outside. So 3 weeks wasn't terrible. It was all right.
And honestly, 3 weeks fun. Didn't even feel like enough because, like, by the end, like, it was like, oh, we're almost done. But, like, it was, there's a little bit of crunch time. There was a little crunch time where it wasn't, like, it wasn't like a walk in the park or anything. So, you know. Maybe a month next time, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned a couple times kind of like the, it seems like you put a lot of importance in the album as like a unit. Can you talk a little about kind of like what you connect to about that medium?
Like making a cohesive piece of art compared to like a bunch of singles or like a playlist, if you will. Because I started listening to albums only like when I was in high school. Like I didn't like listening to playlists. I like really loved listening to like cohesive albums, like start it and end it at the finished thing. So like, I'm really happy that you say that because I think we did get there because a lot of the songs have the same feeling, but they're different enough to bring you to different parts and like different things in your brain. So since we all wrote it and a lot of the things are very similar, but different, it gives you that cohesion from start to finish. And I think another thing is that a really strong opener and a really strong closer helps a lot because it kind of makes it, it really makes that sandwich work.
Nice. I dig that analogy. I mean, one of my favorite tracks on the album is Vibe Police, which, I mean, it's a vibe. And yeah, I mean, I'd just love to hear a little bit about how that one came together.
That one was probably one of the most all-inclusive like songs, right? So most of them were either like two of us like driving or rather like leading the way, whereas that one everybody just came together and it was super beautiful.
When that first started
they were jamming it.
So
it was like just only, me and Phil
and I came to practice late or something.
We had come up with like the progression, like the baseline progression and then the drum part.
And then we brought it to practice. And then Nick started doing that dancey thing. And like, we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
We were like, this is okay. But then Nick did that. We were like, this is great. Like, I'm really happy about this one. And oh my God. Really.
I think he just came up with lyrics right there on the spot too. And at first we were like, it was kind of like a placeholder.
It was like
almost
a joke.
Like,
almost.
Like, oh, vibe.
Because at the time, like, everybody was just like, oh, vibe check. What are you doing? Are you chilling right now or are you not vibing? Like, and I was like, oh, the vibe. I would be like, what are you, the vibe police? You know? So I was like, vibe police tailing right behind.
Yeah. But it kind of like grew on us. We're like, actually, no.
Like, what if we just kept it? Like, it's kind of stupid.
It worked out. We're happy with it. We love that song.
Is that how writing tends to go for you, like kind of spur of the moment, or does it tend to be more like a mapped out process?
Lyrics last. I feel like if the music isn't there, the lyrics won't be there. So we all, when we're writing demos and stuff, I write lyrics all the time in my notebook.
Nick's kind of the wordsmith, if you have
So I just write a lot of like lyrics and you know, words and phrases I like down, and then eventually after the music's right, then the lyrics last. A lot like the writing process of The Strokes.
Yeah.
If you ever, Julian
Casablancas.
Julian Casablancas, his style is really cool. They'll write the whole album and they'll like rush the whole record, but it'll still be beautiful. Like go in, like I saw a little mini doc of him recording the first album with Last Night and. He just spits it free bar right off the top of his head and he just keeps trying until he gets it right. And I like doing stuff like that.
I feel like our music writing too is like the initial idea is very spontaneous. Like usually it'll come from a jam and we'll just be recording it and then we'll be like, all right, that was a cool idea, like let's take those things and like craft them in song. And then we
a lot of temptation to like go off and continue the jam. But it's really important to us to, because, you know.
Stop for a second and be like, yo, that was good.
But let's take it back a second. Let's structure that out and not just, like, keep going. But sometimes it's going to just keep flowing on a jam until you have, like, a bunch of different parts. We'll just record them, cut them, which parts do we like. And, the process is just
experiment with a lot of different, like, feels, ways of playing it.
Very algorithmic now, though. Like, whole planned out, planned to, like, start to finish. We do the same thing now.
Another one of my favorite tracks is Acid Rain. And I don't know, I have a specific question of it, but I'd just love to hear a little bit about how that one came together.
That one came from what we were just talking about. We were standing at our friend's house and...
Is that on tour?
No, we were just at Tim's. We were at Tim's for like 8 hours. Yeah. And we recorded the whole day. And I remember we got back and listened to it, and like Nick had the chord progression, and we were all working with it. And then I remember I thought of a bass line I really liked. And then Nick just like hit the boom, boom, boom.
And then I was like, wait, and we were just kind of like, wait, like, isn't that out of key? Or it's like it switches.
You switch from minor to major, yeah.
Yeah, like you switch keys kind of. I was like, is that weird?
And then it worked. And then I remember I added the triplet thing, and then Freddie followed. And then we were just like, yep.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy was like solo, and we were like, yep. And then yep. It was great. Yeah.
That one kind of. Another one that just kind of came together.
Yeah, like from a jam, completely from a jam.
Well, actually, no. You know what? I had actually written that one.
Oh.
The lyrics previously about it's about my mom's friend who moved from New Jersey to Maine and just like kind of left everything behind because like you know like he was just you know he fell in love, you know. So he just and he was always around when I was a kid, and I was just kind of thinking about what that's like to just like leave society. Like the lyrics are really hermit vibes, right? Just get away from everybody
loving
and
nature.
All the loving nature and just it's you know just about leaving society because society's stressful all the time.
Yeah.
Lots of pressures there.
Yeah, and so what made like that? You said you had written those lyrics previously. What made that kind of like the right song or the right song to fit the lyrics?
I think I was just feeling some sort of way at the time when I wrote that one. Like I said, just trying to escape society. And I was thinking about just climate change and stuff and just about like you ever. So I like Modest Mouse a lot. Yeah. Lonesome Crowded West. I pull a lot of inspiration from that album because it's just such a cohesive piece of art. And it's so many great themes in the album that he covers. So beautiful. If you haven't heard it, you should check it out.
And too, like that one's probably like the most.
It's about like the yeah, exactly. It's about like the deforestation of the West and how that's like a tragedy because like they put a strip mall on the most fertile land in America or something, and that had me thinking because I was on that like spur and. Yeah.
But like Acid Rain, I feel like those lyrics fit because that's about like going against the norm, going against society, and that song's like punk rock a little bit. I feel like it's a little bit more punky, and I feel like that's the connection there.
Yeah,
that's what made it.
I think that's
nice. I mean, I love the way that like it sounds. It seems like you really have like so many of these pieces kind of like plotted out. Like I really enjoy like the kind of the I guess cohesion would be the word that you're trying to like make. And I mean, I'm also like when I checked out some of the live sessions you've been posting, I feel like those are like super well put together. And I was really surprised at how much you like sounded like the record. Can you just I guess talk a little about kind of like that. That work ethic that seems to be clear to me.
Yeah,
we all play a lot together and separately.
Yeah,
but and mostly like, together.
We just really want, you know, we just all love music. Make this a thing. We can put out the art we want to make, and also just this, you know what I mean. And like that's pretty hard, but it takes a lot of work. But like we're always willing to try to be the best we can.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I always like to wrap up the same way, which is just by asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately that you want to share.
Stay positive,
because
if you stay negative all the time, it's just going to lead to bad roads. And if you stay positive, the good things that you talk about will happen.
So you gotta
that's
always
what I'm
going to
say.
Remember that everything happens for a reason.
That
you just
got
to
well.
Try and find light in
the
any
silver
situation,
lining, yeah.
And you'll always be.
Smile at people all the time.
Yeah.
Because literally 90% of the time they smile back and that can make someone say,
yeah
just smiling and just being a happy person.
I like that.
That's it.
I'd say don't drink too much.
I'd say don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And here we are at the end of the first week of this 2-week celebration of Fly on the Call. Be sure to check back starting on Monday for another 5 more awesome conversations as we close out the second full year of the podcast. Thanks so much to the Spins for taking the time to talk. Next time you have some time to chill on a beautiful day, bring a blanket out onto the grass, spin Not If But When, and soak it all in. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you as always to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FindTheCallPod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at findthecallpod@gmail.com. Catch you all on the flippity flip.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freights from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.